Number two, side one, with the interview of Mr. Bill McCormick.
69 years ago.
Now it's wonderful the way some of these people could keep going. You know,
evening up to the Klondike, when there's
about 900
up there. I said, what did you come back with? Just what I forgot. Yes, he's well known around land there, not just beyond Knox. I think it's tough to him now. He had some cattle. And he had them in some little valley up in the mountains or somewhere, you see. And this was a bad winter. He generally had some hay up there, enough to do, but this time he ran out of hay. Cattle were getting younger, so he carried that stuff up. He took it as far as he could by the road, or got something to haul to him. And then he carried it in on his back, about a quarter of a mile up this blasted mountain, you know, to get over into where his cattle were. And then the following year, which was when the fishing was on, you know, in the summer, his cattle were on the mine. He had a couple of bunch on the little island there, you see. And he began to wonder whether they were getting enough to eat, because the water was getting up pretty high, you see. So he wanted to go over there, and there was, he had two young fellows with him in the boat. That's going to their boat, I guess it was. And they called on the coast, and my gosh. There was no recurrence, you know, and they hit a snag, you know, whether it's a soaking snag or what, they tipped the thing over. He was the only one who didn't get drowned. He swam ashore, and he was all right on an island there. For the front left, he was missing. Then, you know, that was, well, it must have been 5 or 6 years after he did this house. He'd be 75.
Fappersdale.
He had to be cut. Oh, I know him, because when I saw him waiting to work, he said, you're a big good worker. He said, I think you should come with me, and I'll lend you the plaster. He said, I mean, I've got my job holding your arm. But he was fussy as the devil, too. He put on a, what did he call it? Well, a line coat, you know, afterwards, a finished coat, you see. After the day's work, he said, now get the lamp. So I get the million mule out, get the man, we'd come over and eat. I was to hold the lamp at a certain angle from the wall, you know, and he'd look in. He said, you can't see his bad faces in the daytime, but he said, you can see them at night. Yeah.
The
shadow, I guess, as you see. Yeah. I couldn't see anything wrong, but he'd go see something wrong.
Well, Mr.
McCormick,
this is
great
fun. I really enjoyed this. I really appreciate this, because, you know, that you told me this morning, there were a lot of little gaps in what we're looking for.
I know, I couldn't say too much about Langley, you see, because as I said, he's well, the Hudson Bay Fort, I guess, was, the Hudson Bay store was still there. I know when Dad used to go there.
That would be opposite the hotel.
I'd imagine so. There wasn't too many buildings around there, either, as I first remember.
Well, they'd pretty near die out completely.
Well, that's right, yeah.
It's coming back now, it's getting to be quite a busy hotel, and of course the ferry being there is about, it's in effect, crossing across the river gap, and that's drawing a lot of traffic. You sit there on the gravel road in the morning and watch the cars go by, and boy, it's just like a freeway, people going to work, possibly some mission. A lot of people are going into Langley to work from the other side.
Mm-hmm. Now they commute a long way too.
Oh, yes.
I know people come from Chilliwack to Vancouver.
Yes, yes.
Too far.
Cost too far.
That costs a lot of money at the end of the year.
Yes. Not only your gas, but your vehicle's wearing out.
Everything goes with it.
No, it doesn't look to make sense to me.
No.
Well, I'm pretty fortunate. I live 5 minutes from work walking.
That's not bad.
I very seldom walk. One of the reasons that I don't walk very often were these hobnail boots.
Oh, yeah.
I walked down the street one morning with my lunch kit and the hobnail boots on, and it was five dogs came out. And you know, I'm not afraid of dogs. I never have been. But that morning, I just figured, well, if one of them tackled me, I'd be in trouble. They were all big dogs. And since then, I haven't walked to work very often. Just the scrape of those hobnail boots.
Oh, I think it's something new.
I shouldn't be holding you up here. You
want to
have your lunch?
No, I have my breakfast about 10 o'clock, Jim. I don't eat at noon at all.
You don't eat?
I find that, well, I think I'm better off because I'm not doing any work.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I know people eat 3 meals a day and they're not doing 3 meals. I don't think that's good. Even walking, you think, oh, you wouldn't know this room, he had enough to walk somewhere.
Yes, I do.
Oh,
do
you?
Yes, I'm not too
old. Oh, yeah, he's quite a boy.
Yes.
Up and down this road every morning, but you see, he'd a heart attack. He always was a busy man, you know. He didn't tear around. He's very quiet about everything.
Uh-huh.
Took it cool, but he always worked long hours in fishing and that.
Uh-huh. No, I sat over here where the policeman's house built. I don't log there one afternoon to talk to him.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, I'd been waiting over there at Larry's, and I sat there and talked to him. And, I found out a little bit about the community.
Yeah. Well, that's really, well, he came in 23.
In 23?
Pretty young at that time, be about 10, maybe, might be even 12 again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he's. Well, he was here all through the 30s, you know. He was fishing. He got married in 33. He was fishing at the time. They lived in a little scow down on the river there, you know. He built a fairly big house there now, and I said to Francis, his wife, I said, you wait till the family all grew up and gone, then you build a big house. Oh, but she said, you know, the grandchildren will build a house.
Yeah.
Well, I said, that's a happy thought. What they all going to do with his house?
The one in town in Fort Lanning, me? Oh, he's planning to sell it and move out here.
No, the devil.
That's Ernie.
That's right. No, he just came from Bunny. He's not here all day today. He had some reason for going there. I don't know what it could be. Let's see, Al's house is, and his son runs the farm, Jim.
Yeah, when did the McClellans come into this area?
Gosh, they were here a long time too, because now I remember the McClellans when I was pretty young. They must have come in around 1900. Even before. Of course, I didn't know too much about that country down there before that.
But he was telling me, this would be Dan, is it?
Yeah, Dan, he's
one. He was telling me that he had the first milking machine here. And he had the power for the milking machine with the bull.
Oh, yeah.
On a treadmill.
A treadmill.
Yeah.
Treadmill.
And he said, the first.
That's right.
If I remember correctly, he said the first year they had just one bull. He said that bull was a real dual purpose animal. Because he said that bull milked all the cows. They put him on the treadmill there morning and night, and he operated the name as the power for the milk.
Well, now, I wonder was that when he was on the old man's place?
I would think so.
I
yes.
think it must have been,
yes.
you know, because when
yes.
he moved on his own place, it was gas, you know.
Yes.
That's the old man's place.
But you know, I talked to him, I guess, for an hour before
mm-hmm.
one day, and I haven't seen him since.
Oh, yeah.
He invited me to come down, and I just never got the chance. He was another very interesting man.
Yeah. No, he didn't there long. Then he was born down there, I expect, now. And, your sister lived in Langley. You never met her, I guess. She had a new store in Langley here, I think. And a dry goods dealer or something. I forget her married name. Because I knew Mary when she was younger than Dan. Yeah, I think she may be nearly younger than Yes, there were three McClellan brothers. That is the old times. Old Alec, he lived right across the road from, you know, the big gravel pit that you're coming out of. You pass the Langley Bluff coming this way, and on your right is that big gravel pit. Well, that's part of the old McClellan place. That's where the old man was. And Alec, the brother, was right across the road from him, next to the railroad cut into his place. Well, then young Dan, he's up this side of the Jackson Road. Well, not young Dan anymore. I call him young Dan. Young Dan anymore. The boys were on the place, young Jimmy. They had a big bunch of cows, and then they sold everything. And I guess he went back into cows. I don't know what happened. He was going to bring the beef kind of, but I guess he didn't see a limit or something. I don't know. But the corn bunch, they were there a long time. Bill, if you get a hold of Bill, I think you can get some from him after the give you line up on the belly, down there in the belly there. On the west, of course, the west that lives, I'd say, down by the road there at the bluff, you know. He'd be a man, I suppose, now. He's 50. I guess it would be, you know. I remember he was just a kid, but I knew them. The West family, you see, the old man and the boys that used to work on the boats. The old man never worked on the boats. He helped them move the boats, you see. And then the family ran the boats. Now there was, George was a captain. George and Billy, they were captains. They had no papers, you know, but they could steal boats, you see. But they had an old one there. He was just there, you know, captain. He had papers. Poor old man. More or less lived on the bottom. Didn't matter to them because they did the whole thing anyway. And the engineer was quite a bit the same, but Charlie was Indian. Charlie did everything there. He drove them all there. Well, then the other boy, there was Fred, Johnny. Henry never went on the boat. He was the oldest, and he stayed on the farm, I guess. But the rest of them manned the boat. And the girls, there was two of the girls on the boat there. They cooked for the boys and all this sort of thing. It's family affair.
Family affair.
And they, when that boat went to mission, that Royal City, I tell you, they turned to and they built the, what they called the Defender, which was a little different type. It's a square bow. It was good for these mud landings. These sharp bows, you went in there a little too hard, and you, there you were, trying to back out, you know. But this one, they built it as a square bow, the old Defender. They ran that. And then after both these railroads got working and the trucks started working well, you know. Boats were too slow. You see, the truck picks the stuff up here and he puts it where it has to go. The boat, you hauled it down, maybe a bad road and a big hill and all this. Then if you get stuff on the boat, you had to haul it all back again. So, the trucks were it was a real answer, you see. The boat, they paid it out. But it was too bad they didn't save some of them.
Yes, maybe was.
The old Defender. Skeena was the last. Now, what happened to Skeena, I don't know. She was running up to 28.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was called the Milk Run for a while, was it?
Well, that was another boat. The Milk Boat was a, what did they call that boat? It used to just come to Glen Valley.
Yeah.
From there down, and they took the milk to the Westminster Creamery, I think. Westminster Creamery there. Well, we shipped cream there, but we shipped it on the boat, yes. You know, once or twice a week. We had it separated. But as soon as they, the train was running here in 17, this local train, you saw on the CN, well, then we started shipping milk into Vancouver, and Fraser Valley milk producers were starting in business, so we shipped it through to Vancouver, which was a lot less monkeying around with milk and separating. But it meant you had to go down to that station every morning. Fresh milk, you see.
Oh, yes.
No, it's quite, that's quite a bad hill. Well, it's just like going down the Pemberton Hill.
Yes.
Only this hill was just straight mud, blue clay, and that gravel.
that way is pretty turned on.
Boy, in the winter, you know, they're all about that. And you get clay, and it's hard to get off to even get all over clay.
I've heard that there was a brick plant here at one time.
Right to where this road run down, that was just where the neighbors warp after, you see, the government. Marsh's land, they call it. Well, up from that about, well, it's on part of the old Gibson place, lower end there, right down the river. When they put the railroad through, they took all what little land he had there. Well, I think he wanted to get out that way because, you see, he was in a bad place. Although, once the railroad was in, I thought that would have given him a chance to ship his stuff, you see. He used to take those bricks, load them on little scow, tow it across the river, wheel them on wheelbarrows up and put them on CPR flat tires. Well, you know, that was too much. You couldn't do that.
Well,
and when the railroad came, he told, oh, you know, he made a big howl that they'd been in our business, and they did get some money out of them and get out.
Well, did he have all the material there for the
bricks?
Did he have to add anything to the clay?
The only thing he did, he had to get sand. He tried the river sand, but that's too fine. But the sand was like older, I got from this house here, it's further up the river, not too far. And I guess that's what he got for the last quiet of him.
But he had an oven of some sort?
Oh, yes. He used wood to burn the bricks. He got wood up on top of the hill and he had to tend to shoot them. But the bricks weren't too bad. He had something here, I think, in the old house there. No, he was a general in the old house. Got that from Haney was the brickyard. Most people did this. We got some of his bricks here anyway, and I forget what he was doing. But they weren't bad bits, you know. The clay was supposed to be good. He'd been working up at Clayburn, you see. And he was kind of looking around and he discovered this big rock there, you know. This big clay, good enough. But I think the first brick was the sand with a little fine sand. They were too easy to break, you see. Although, now I noticed the way they were burnt. Now the ones close to where the fire was, you know, you couldn't hardly break them with a hammer. And the further away you got, the easier for them to break.
Where's
he
getting the heat,
you see? That's just, now maybe he, something to do with the way he burnt this. No, I don't know. But he had a little horse there in the mixing room. He didn't mix it with a big long arm to it, you know, kind of sweet thing. Little horse going around, and he had this big, what do you call, pug mill. That's where he mixed his clay, you know.
Yeah.
He had four or five men around.
They had a fair
sized
operation.
Oh, yes. But, you know, this country, nobody used bricks. They used more now than they ever did, I think. Nobody, brick house or brick foundation, no way. Put in a chimney and that was all.
When was this brick
flat
first started? Did you know?
Let's see. It was still here in 1909. Now they've been going maybe for 3 years, I think. But I think he came in here probably about 1905. And was just him and the wife and kids. And he kind of worked along there for a while until he got things in shape and he had some hired help. He didn't have very good help. He used to get to some of these young fellows. Just, at that time, there's a lot of young Englishmen coming out into this country, and they were from families where they didn't know what work was anyway, you know. Their hands were just kind of in the way they were doing things. And but he had about three or four of them were not involved, but he didn't pay them very much, I guess that was the idea. They'd cut cord went up there and they'd haul it and shoot it down, you know. They took quite a bit of wood too.
Oh yes.
But when the railroad came, I think he figured that was a nice way to get out. Since then, of course. Well, Claiborne up here, and I don't know that Haney brickyard, I think, still runs. Now, I'm not sure. But that was the only yard when I first remembered this country. It was just that one of Haney. And I believe they had one, a little one down there in the 10th century at that time, too. And the prisoners making it. And they had the chain gang on the street. You never saw the chain gang.
No.
You heard me?
Yeah.
Well, I should have ripped the same time, you know, made up blue overall coat pants, you know, and then a straw hat. In the middle of winter was that straw hat, you know, that would track you. And there'd be a guy walking up and down there with a gun, you know, shotgun, of course. Double-barreled shotgun. Sometimes, too, there was a fair-sized gang. They worked around the parks and that in Westminster, you know. Until 93? Oh, 92. About in December, so we didn't get our tax notice till 93. And you know, here, oh, it's 5 or 6 years ago. My taxes got up to 300 and something like that. I'd been looking around through some old bills, and I found the first receipt, you know, this tax notice. And Dan had paid me $93. $8 out of 160 acres. I said to them, you know, and I'm going to pay my taxes. So, some of them are just really done it the first time. I said, here, look at this. Where the hell did you get this? It was $8 for 160 acres, and I was paying 350 or something for 80. I only had 60. I said, that's the way things happen. Don't run with this now. He said, I might want it for something. So he phoned up one day, a couple of years ago. There was something going on out there, some sort of a deal. I don't know just what it was. Centennial of some kind. He wanted me to send it out. So I put an envelope and sent it to him. And he sent it back. And then he wanted it again for something, yeah, and I never got it back. I don't know what happened to it. I guess he's keeping it though. But I had one.
So papers like that are priceless.
I guess so. Because you can't replace them.
But you see, we do have a coffee machine.
Oh, yes.
And we have all kinds of good camera equipment that we can take pictures of. In fact, I would like to take your picture this morning, if you don't mind now. It's entirely up to you, but I'd like to take your picture. Just to go over and see. Because this is really what I've been after. Al came over, it's about 3 years ago, and I was talking to him. And at that time, I went right in, as soon as I got a chance, I went into the office, and I said that I found a man that I want to interview. But it's taken that long to get here. But it's a pretty nice place over there.
I hope.
It is. And, I mean, this is part of her job, is to do research, to try and get a true picture of what's going on. What went on 100 years ago, and you know, what do you give me this morning? You can't get it out of the book.
Well, no, I guess not. I like to get a hold of some, especially about the northern countries. I got a book here, well, it's up at Evanoff's now. It's called Those Golden Mountains, or Our Golden Mountains, or something. And it's a fellow named, I knew when he was, well, I knew him back in 1915. A long time ago, about 60 years ago. Just a kid, well, he'd be about in his early teens. And I've known him ever since. I mean, he's retired now, he's living up in Hatskin. He wrote this book. It's about all the mountain range over. You know, there's been little gold mines and gold mines and all that. You've heard of this pit lake deal, I nearly lost mine. Well, he wrote about those. And this book, you know, I got one of them here, not too long ago. He sent it to me. He knew I'd been reading one, looking at one belonging to one of the other boys, and thought maybe I'd like it. I guess DeGannis told him I'd like it. But he sent it down to me, you know, and that's up there. But it has the story about old Jim Cromley carrying those sacks of flour off, you know. 11 sacks or 12 sacks, whichever it was. And I'd heard this story from my own dad, you know, lots of times he'd be telling other people because he knew all the No, Jim was carrying, but I thought it was a lady he carried off these sacks. Seemed to me Charlie said it's Haney, but it didn't matter. It couldn't have been either. 12 of these 50-pound sacks, or 49-pound sacks that used to have flour in them, you see. And they'd get the hands behind them, you know, and hold, and you'd pile the sacks out and see if we could carry all this. And old Jim had carried these 12 sacks with 600 pounds back in, you see. And Charlie mentioned that, and then he mentioned another old-timer, that I knew he was up at Stanley. He was there in the Philippine Islands. Peter Bilardo, where the native people died, you know, black curly hair and gray dark. And Him and this one of the Carter brothers from up there, they were all lovers of them. They had got kind of in together, and they put in a patch of potatoes to sell them in the fall. And apparently, Pete was away for some reason or other, and Carter took the potatoes and sold them, apparently, you see. And when Pete came back, he had some row, so Carter pulled out. Carter was up on the east cutting sheet and pulled up and stayed late. Pete took the rifle one day, and he went up, and Carter was coming down the lake in the canoe, you know. And when he got arrested, you know, Pete left the rifle and fired. Three or four shots at him. Went for two or three through the boat. And Carter lay down in the bottom, you know, and the canoe, and he fell in with his hands. He got ashore and got away. And I and Carter very well lived in Mount Lehman afterwards. And I had heard them. I didn't know whether Pete could shoot or not, but the boys said Pete had wanted to kill him. He just put bullets through the boat, you know. He didn't really kill him at all, but the story there said he didn't. Well, I can't. But anyway, of course, Carter reported this, and put Pete. They took him down, and they put him in the pilot. So I guess he, you know, down a little too far.
Who is the author of this book, do you know?
Charlie Miller.
Charlie Miller.
He lives at Hattick there now. And I'll get a hold of it. You go up and down again.
Yeah,
I'll let you see it, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, if we can get the name of it, maybe we can get one, because, you know, again, what
was
the
there was a little story in the mission. It began because of that Birch Gibson's son of them. But, no. Birch, you know, Annie Gibson, Birch's wife.
Yeah.
Her brother lives at Silverdale. Leonard began.
Yeah.
Well, he was the one,
yeah.
Oh, well, he was the one that I was, his place, you see, when he told me about Charlie writing his book.
Oh.
He told Charlie I'd like one, so Charlie sent me this book, you see, the autograph and everything. So, I'll get a hold of him.
Good.
But, he's writing another one. What did he call that? I guess it was Len. No. I saw it in, one of these, either the Abbotsford paper, or the New Providence, I think it was in the Abbotsford paper. That's all what he was writing in the news. It says right up about it. And I think it's called the Save River, or something about it. But very good. And I've seen, well, one place I noticed going up the Save, and I asked some of them, I said, what's been going on across the river? And all they said, that's over the Save River. They said, that was an old mine there. You see, we dug up the screen. And apparently there's been a lot of that sort of thing go on. No better than much sure, we could all get a little out of it. Except the story about the pit. And I remember that years and years ago, hearing about this. Well, he was a son. Grandfather, not a father, a young fellow, when he was younger than I knew, and he knew the man, this Indian, that had the mine up there. This old Billy, he was one of the, in the fourth third land, he was a Hudson Bay man, and his daughter's son was one of them. He was had Indian dug in too, of course. And he used to know this old dude, John Summer. He was the man that had the mine, you see. And he'd go up to the reserve and try to find out something about that John. This young Harry was kind of a nice kid, I guess. And the old Summers took quite a fancy to him, knowing and telling stories and, you know, and everything, but he wouldn't. Harry would try to find out where that mine was. He said, no way, he wouldn't tell him. But he's my pet. So after he was gone and everything, by God, Harry still had that in his head, and he took two or three summers off, and he went up in there, him and a partner, you know, took a grub steak, and they hunted all over.
No.
There's three different people I know that have done that. Go up there, and, you know. It may, well, of course, I guess that he had to get that gold somewhere. There must be a mine there somewhere, but I don't know. Well, that's what Harry said, and he said it's a terrible place to try and get around. And you know, so many have got killed going through their company. You know, it's nothing but big canyons and the sand you didn't kill them. I think the last report I heard was 25, and he'd lost the lives over that fool mine, you know. That included the women that the old stomach had killed, you see. So they were going to just run into the Indian woman.
Tape number two, side number two of Mr. Phil McCormick.
Now, after he was gone and everything, well, God, Harry still had that in his head, and he took two or three summers off, and he went up in there, him and a partner, you know, took a grub stake, and they hunted all over. But, you know, there's three different people I know that have done that. Go up there and, you know, it may, well, of course, I guess that he had to get that gold somewhere. It must be a mine or somewhere, but I don't know.
A mine territory.
Well, that's what Harry said, and he said it's a terrible place to try and get around. And you know, so many of them killed going through that country. You know, it's nothing but big canyons, and there's so many of them killed, isn't it? I think the last report I heard was 25, and he'd lost the lives over that fool mine. That included the women that the old stomach had killed, you see. They were going to just run into the Indian woman, and she well, they found the body. The last one, they found the body in the Fish River, with his knife stuck in the back. But they didn't do anything to him. Well, he got away from them. They had him in jail, and I didn't, for some reason, he got away. And he shot an Indian. Yeah, just for nothing. Just shot him. They didn't have badges, you see. They did have him there in Westminster. But, I have a little book here. Have you ever read the story in print?
No. Well, I think I know just about it, you know. And they all seem to run pretty much.
Let's see up there again. 62. So much mine. You take that around.
Well, I'll tell you what,
I'll
take it along
and
copy it, and I'll bring it back.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Good.
I read several pieces, and it all seemed to figure out pretty
much
the same.
Yeah.
And some very little, some came, there was a map. And this map got to Frisco, now to San Francisco there. And how does that work? The fellows, I think, came back and tried to find money. And what he asked his life to, I'm not sure. A lot of these fellows did, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I remember here, well, the last one that I saw that had been up there was, I was in Amherst one day, I was in the butcher shop. I was waiting my turn. This fellow was talking about something. Here, he was talking about this mine, what a terrible place and all this, and I listened. So finally I say, will you look up the pit looking for that rock mine? And he said, yes, what do you know about it? Well, I said, I know two of the people that went up there to try to find him, and he was quite excited about it. But he'd been up there, really going along with his trip, you know. I think he'd been up there about 6 weeks, because his rug ran out. And, oh, he was all warmed up, but of course he hadn't found anything, but he thought probably he'd go back. But now, I didn't know whenever I asked his name, and so I don't know whether he went back or not. But he hadn't found it. But I know there was one man was lost. He was an Englishman, and apparently he hadn't been in this country too long. And he'd gone in from Ruskin down here. That's just across the river. He went from this side, you see. And they got some of the boys from Mount Leeming. They were Leeming fellows. They were supposed to be good men and good in that kind of jungle, you see. So they took two or three of them from Mount Leeming. But they never found him. And they decided he'd been killed. Because the places there, they said, you'd fall in one of these cannons, and you knew it was found anyway, the animals would be chipping them,
yeah.
Obviously. But, from up there, he was getting that gold somewhere, and
yeah.
It's probably where it's up in there.
No, I've heard more or less illegally, but, you know,
yeah,
that's the way I've got it mostly. I'd like to do a lot more reading than I do, but every time I get a chance to read, I do. You as I say, coming from Manitoba to a different province.
Yes, right.
Entirely. Well, Manitoba's flat, there's not that much there. But here, every little nook and corner has got a story.
Yeah, well, that is just what Charlie was writing about the stage, exactly. I don't know.
A lot of these people go into such great detail to find out the facts.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Of course, now you see, it's getting a long time. It's pretty hard to get an old man that knows too much.
Yeah,
see, about
these
things. But, and the Indians, well, they're all dying off too, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them
are last. I don't know, to me, the Indian has just lost his culture. There's a fear of them coming back, but they really can't go back any length of time.
No, that's it.
They haven't written a history as such, and well, once the old timers are gone, there's no story left there.
Not much left.
But I think this is what I feel, that there's a great lack of knowledge in it.
Well, there used to be lots of them around too, you know. When I first remember, that river was just full of these dugouts, you know, and up and down the river, the lake. Just sailing, they didn't bother the streams or anything else, they go by boat. And when the summer came, they were always fishing. When the sockeye season was over, about being August, the whole works would take off for Agassiz and Chilliwack, Sardis, Peak Hop. Boats, two men, two pair of oars in each of those fishing boats, you see. Wife, kids, dogs, everything there.
Yeah.
I remember once I was in Westminster, and it was just when the Indians were moving, the sockeye season was shut off. See, they were all moving in there buying their supplies because they had the money, see, they all got paid off. And there was an Alfred Adams railway grocery store, and that's where we used to be in the Scotland. And he said, the fellow was putting some sugar down, you see, when it was just like that. And Dad said to him, selling lots of the Indians these days, he said, that's 80 sacks of sugar, so far 100 pounds sacks. He said, I went out to store this morning, 80 sacks. That'd be around noon, you see, we were down on the boat. And I remember, that's that guy, he went down, you know, Indians were all over, dogs were everywhere. First dog comes on up with his legs, so, that's a shame. The next dog comes, I said, you're not going to eat sugar again. But they buy it, my gosh, they used to turn over money, you know, boy, those storekeepers, you know, I guess they like to soak it too, you
know.
And I never could get them, the dogs very often would run along the bank, you see. Tom's, what they were. Well, they used the dogs behind for it. So.
Now the Indian, I don't know, we forgot along the way somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'll give you about them moving up river. Well, they turn the dogs, and they go up on the side here and get their own deer scent, you see. And a deer will run maybe around in a circle two or three times if the hounds are after them, then they take for the water, you see, into the river. They get down, well, the Indians are right down on the river, you see, when the deer got in oil, well, then they get, sure. That was their way of doing business, you see, getting that. And I see the safe now, these Morrison boys that we spoke of, you know, Langley. And Murray, John Murray, he was Murrayville, they named Murrayville after. They were down there just one Sunday, and I was coming across the river, I think Dad and my sister were with them. And Murray, and there was the two of the Morrisons, it would be Alec and Bill, I guess. And they were had their hounds up, Murray had hounds, you see, deer hounds. They were after these deer. They had two tied up in the boat. They were shipped to the old country to parks. And that's how they caught them, you know. And we started and talked to them, you know. They had two of them tied their legs, trying to rein in the boat, and then hounds, we could hear them up on the hill there, you know, bringing another one down. But these Indian dogs, you know, we had sheep. And our sheep would go down the hill quite often. You know, we let them run at large. These damn dogs, you know, was killing them, you see. We had to put a stop to that. In fact, they killed one right across the road here one day. Well, there's no road there, but just across there. And I don't know, somebody and Dad, I guess, I was away somewhere that day. I guess Maybe his dad saw it, or somebody saw it and told him, you see, and he went down to meet it. I had a gun here at the time. He went down to Marcia's, the neighbor's, and he got the shotgun, you see, the buckshot. Came up, there was two deer hounds eating the sheep. He shot the one. No, he didn't shoot them. They took off. So they went up in the woods, and they got on a deer track, you see. And he heard them baying, and the deer was searching. So he hurried up there, and he went in on the trail, and I dashed along. The deer passed him, and here comes it. He shot the first one and put the shot right in the shot. You know, but shot at close range. And he shot at the other, and he hit him in the leg, the hind leg. He knew he hit because it hollered. Well, it wasn't too long now, maybe a month or two after, he was going down on the boat, the old steamboat, you know, to Westminster. And Jim Cromarty was on there. Never Jim gets talking. Jim tells him about somebody, his two deer hounds, and the one of them never did come on, and the other came up with a broken leg. Dad, he said, very sorry about the gun, you know.
Well, you first didn't tell him to
talk. Because those fellas, you know, a deer hound was something. Of course, in one days I think it was illegal. Now I think it would be, because as long as I can remember, it was illegal to chase deer. But anyway, that stuff, they didn't kill any more sheep.
No, I'd imagine once they started on the sheep, there would soon be no sheep.
No. I didn't have sheep long. Oh, maybe for 10 or 12 years, and then. Well, as I say, you will lose quite a few, you know, the way it was. So, we got more cows than the sheep.
How much bears, cougars, and whatnot around?
Well, there was quite a few bears, but not many cougars. I only saw one around in the woods here, and I was going over. We ran out of water just in the summer. I was going over the big gulch by the stream there, you know, and I had a pail, and I'd be about 10 maybe, no more. And I heard a pail, and I had a little dog. Dog that we had here, and he was with me, and I was going to start down into the gulch to go down, you see, and on the trail, finally this cougar came up, stepped up on the trail, you see, and looked right at me. Well, I just kind of froze there, you know. The little dog was behind me, and he came up, you see, and he saw me, made a run, you know, let a yip out of him, and the cougar took off that way, and I took off this. And that's the only one I ever saw in the woods. Except there's several shot, you know. I saw them after a shot. But there was quite a few bear around here. In fact, there was lots of meat that time. But I did shoot the one. Dog put up a tree one time. I shot it. I don't know why I shot it, but I did. But they never did me harm.
How about elk? Was there any elk here?
Not. Well, when Dad first came, there was elk up on Sumas Prairie, like. They come down on the prairie to feed, and then they were up in Better Mountain and Sumas Mountain, you see, inside the prairie. Mm-hmm. But there was only a few left. This country at one time had been full of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they were soon shot off, he said, after he came, and there was no more. But when I first remember anything moving around, and there was a big old cedar stump when he burnt out hollow, mm-hmm. And there was a big elk horn stood about this high, you know, it was a big horn.
Mm-hmm.
And it was standing in the stump there, you know, and I didn't pay no attention to it for years. Dad had found it and stood it in there, you see. So after I grew up, I thought, well, now I'll take that horn home. And I did. I have it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I found, quite a few of the butts, you know. Something always was chewing these horns. Now, what would be eating them?
Porcupines will do it.
Wasn't too many porks here then, but there was coon. I think they were, you know.
Yeah, they possibly were.
And I noticed all these horns. But this was the only really good one that I ever found. I found one with, I think there's about four prongs to it, and the butt. Find these butts, you know, in your clearing land. Maybe about that much. And you find quite a few of them. And the same with the Indian relics. I found quite a few of their stone hammers and their spears and all that. But I always gave them away. The last one I found, I gave it to one of Al's girls. She was going to school yet, and she took it. Teacher didn't want it. If anybody knew of any of that stuff. So they have it in school, she said. But this elk one I have here, that's the best one that I ever saw. So I said, why don't you put it down in Langley in the museum? Well, I said, no. They'd say, he bought that from the Caribou. You know, there's thousands of them up there. Well, you know, that's nothing new anymore. Although, now, when was it, last year or the year before, there was 7 or 8 of them came to Chilliwack Lake. Now, that's pretty close down.
Yes.
They come through from Princeton, I guess, through the mountains through. And one was shot. Of course, you're not supposed to shoot them.
Yeah, right.
But there was one shot. Bert Gibson's mother lives, well, he's back in the, just from the mountain, east of Chilliwack, southeast of Chilliwack. And I don't think he saw them, but it was fairly close to where he is there, you know, they came. But the locals out and owned them, you know, killed off 70 years ago, pretty well.
But they, the first Hudson's Bay crew come in, they called them red deer.
Well, that's what's called
that. They didn't know, apparently, that they were an elk. But there's different references to them, you know, referring to size and so on. And apparently there is a red deer in Europe that is something similar to the elk.
Oh, I see. So they call them
red deer. And as far as calling them an elk, in the Hudson Bay records,
they're
referring to the Fort Nothing.
No. Well, they tell me that moose, that there was no such thing as moose here years ago. The Indians had no word for moose, you know.
Yes.
They figured they came across from Russia, across the Siberian there.
Mm-hmm.
Which they might.
But I tried to find out, and any reading that I've done, it doesn't refer to moose in this area at all. There's no mention of moose.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I don't think any moose ever was. Well, now, how far up do you have to go before you strike the moose country?
Quite a long way from here.
I think so. I've never heard of any down around Hope or anything like that.
But
the elk apparently were. Now, why they all, got killed off, I suppose.
But they went, in this Fraser Valley, then. Mm-hmm. It's a narrow strip of land that's been densely populated. It would tentacles, they'd be shot off pretty
much. Oh,
quick.
Yes, yeah.
And they're an odd animal, they're a slow-moving,
and they're really, now I know, coming through by Jasper and that, the darn thing is elliptical right up to now.
Oh, yes, right. Well, when in Manitoba, where I lived, there was all kinds of elk.
There was, eh?
But, I had the experience of going up to Jasper last year to a training course.
Uh-huh.
And we were right out in the woods there, and you could get right up beside them.
Yeah.
And we had a naturalist with us, one of the best that I've ever been with. Another young fellow, myself, from Fort Rodhill, went out with him one night, just the three of us. We went about 40 miles back the wilderness trails in Jasper, and we spotted this big herd of mountain sheep.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, now, we want to get pictures of them. He said, don't look at them, don't even from here, don't look at them. But he said, just walk on an angle towards them, but he said, don't look at them at all. And he said, you'll get a picture. Well, it seemed funny to me. But that they never moved until we got turned to take our picture, and then they were gone just in a second or two. But he said, he inferred that the Indian could actually do this. He could walk right practically up to an animal.
Without,
let's face it, before it was guns, and there was no noise, and now, bang, And, maybe it was a lot different than we realized, too. But the Indian wouldn't, elk, for example, he wouldn't slaughter more than he wanted.
No, that's all. Oh, they didn't believe in that.
No. Well, Mr. McCormick, I think that I should go, and I'm sure going to come back, and I'm going to bring you some pictures. We have quite a lot of slides down there. I'll bring out a projector and show you some of them. Maybe you'd like to come down to the fort and have a look at it.
I can do that sometime.
I'll come up and get you. So
I haven't been to the old fort before. I was down there the other day with Al when he was looking at that job. He was digging out for the museum there.
Oh, yes.
And he was running the cats
on
the
boys. But what we're trying to do is making a living Hudson Bay Fort.
Mm-hmm.
See, we're not, we're wearing period costumes on this stuff that I've got on, and we're trying to make it the way way it used to be. It's a pretty tough job.
Oh.
It gives you a little favor if a lot of it might be anyway.
There's that. I don't suppose you've ever run across a name Carter?
Yes. Earl Carter.
Earl Carter?
Yes.
He's been here, you know.
Is that right?
The last time he came, he was on crutches. He broke his foot or something, and him and the wife came along.
Uh-huh.
And you know what he came for? You see this wainscoting around?
Yes.
He'd been in the kitchen here one time. He came, a couple of years before, and he said, I'm going to come back one of these days and see you. So he didn't show up for quite a while. And then he came along, and he said they had a house in Burnaby they were fixing up. And he wanted to put that sort of thing in his kitchen, you see, the same as he'd seen here. So he came up and made it up to that, you see. Well, Carter, now, his uncle is the man I told you that old Filipino shot at, Norton Carter. If you see him, you tell him. Of course, he knows the story, he must, I know. Sure, he seemed a nice guy, too.
Well,
I remember who brought him here. It was Romeo Pilon. You never met Romeo, I guess. He lives further down the Pemmery Hill. He worked on the old fort there. When did they really?
1957,
58. Yeah, well, Romeo worked there, you know.
Uh-huh.
And Romeo was in one day, and he wanted to know if I had any old stuff. I gave him an old broad axe and an old box saw, you know, with a frame and... five or six things, an old mattock or something. You know, two or three things he took along. And if it was for Carter, he was collecting them, you see. So then he and Carter came up one day, and they had a kind of visit. Don't know what was on Carter's mind, except for then anyway, he came back here with his wife. And I hadn't seen him. That must have been nearly 2 years ago, and I wondered if he was still going around.
You know the Boland family at Fort Langley.
Yeah, I don't know him personally. Mm-hmm.
Well, Ian Bullard, he worked as a guide at the fort for a while, and and Earl Carter are going to Expo, and they're going to demonstrate broad axing and this type of thing.
Oh, I see.
So, possibly, but he's interested in this type of thing.
Yeah. This house that they're fixing up, it was in Burnaby now. I'm not yet sure exactly what the story was.
Uh-huh. I could find out because Earl Carter's cousin is working as a guide at the fort.
What's his name?
Lorna Thompson. She's a young girl. She's been married.
Oh, Thompson.
Now, I don't know.
These Carters, you see, they wound up around Stave Falls there.
Uh-huh.
Stave Lake.
Oh, I see.
They were logging one thing or another, and one of them used to live at Silverdale. Well, he's dead now, and there was another one he used to. What was his name? You've probably heard of him. He made totem poles.
I have heard.
Yeah, not the last time I heard of him, but one time I heard of him. He was going to San Francisco, and he was down to some fair or some dealon, you know, and he was going to make totem poles there. And I asked Earl about him, I guess, and I forget what he did say. I've never run across him or heard anything of him around up here, so I don't think he's around here probably, you know.
Earl Carter was at the fort within the last year, but I hadn't seen him for, you know, quite some time.
Well, he was on crutches, you know, time he came here.
But I have the awfulest time remembering names, you know. I remember a face. Remember names. I mean,
well, you get so many, you can't remember them.
Well, I've been more or less in this type of work for the last 20 years. Well, I've met thousands and thousands of people. You know, you very seldom actually ever hear a name. And it gets to be a habit. You don't, you know.
Mm.
Everybody's the same, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, now this Carter, this fellow, this Norton that got shot at, he married one of the West that I was telling you used to be on the boat.
Yes.
Well, they lived in Mount Lehman there, you know. And Norton died, and, well, then Mary died too, after, but she outlived him. Well, then there was another sister, married Congan out here, and another one married Taylor. Taylor...
Would be from the Royal Engineers, would he, or not?
Which?
The Taylor?
No. No, I know. The old man, no, they were, let's see, they were Nova Scotians. And they came to Mount Lehman here about, just after my dad did, I guess. And the old lady, she lived to be 103. Lived out here, and then the old man, he died before her. And he used to help West. He was a shipbuilder, I guess he was. He used to help West with their boat deal, you see. And they cut ship's knees up here one time, you know. These crooked trees, you know. Natural knees. Remember the tailors taking them out. That's a long time ago now. I don't know where I'm going to. Some shipyard, I suppose. But yes, the Norton and the Carters and the tailors, you see, they were kind of hooked up to marriage. And West.
I guess this is really quite a common thing for neighbors to be married to the
Carters. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There today, there wasn't a lot of people here.
And that's it. And everybody pretty well knew everybody. Well, now you take this riverboat deal. You got on there, you had half a day ahead of you, and you were talking to everybody, you know, meet there. I often said there was more farming done on that old boat than the whole of the valley. And they had a bar on there, you know, the boys were buying each other a drink, and that, and they had really a good time, you know. But you did, you met, you know, you knew where everybody lived in that, you see, they cut these landings and all. But now you don't know your next door neighbor.
That's it.
The city people are moving out. They think they're moving into the country, but they're bringing the city with them, you know. That's what's happening.
Unfortunately.
That's what's happening, you know.
Coming to Canada from South Africa, that would be...
I'd like, first of all, to get your full name, Mr. Duncan.
Gordon Duncan.
And the year you were born, and where you were
born. I was born in 1884 in London, England, but my parents were Scottish, so I don't consider myself a Cockney.
that's a good thing to say, too.
In the year 1901, I went to South Africa. And the South African War was on, and there I joined the Natal Mounted Police.
The Tau?
Natal Mounted Police of South Africa, and I served in it until 1905, when I was given a discharge saying that if I came back in 6 months, I could get my old rank and status. And so I set off to see a little more of the world. I went up the east coast of Africa to Zanzibar and changed ships there, not trains, it was all on the sea, of course. And from there I went through the Suez Canal, the Red Sea and the Suez Canal and the Mediterranean to Hamburg on a German East African liner. From there I crossed to Harwich in England. And there I stayed for 2 weeks with my parents that were still living there. Then I came to Canada just to see the country. Coming right through to Vancouver, I just stopped at Montreal, Winnipeg, Calgary, a day at each of these places. But at Vancouver, I found there was only one ship a month to Australia, and I would never get back to Africa within the 6 months. And furthermore, I liked what I had seen of Canada, especially the western part, so I decided to stay. And after traveling around and working for a while in Alberta, I went to Regina, and there I joined the RNWMP. That was in September of 1905.
That was the Northwest Mounted Police?
Yeah, Northwest Mounted Police.
Still in those days.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I served there until 1909. Part of that service, in fact, most of 1906 and 1907, I was orderly to the first governor of Saskatchewan, the Honorable Amy Fichette. Then I got moved to Kamsack, which was among the several Indian reserves. And while I was there, I was ordered to go to the Rhino Mountain Forest Reserve to assist the forest rangers in getting squatters removed from the reserve.
They had squatters in those days too?
Yeah.
But they were in on Indian property. The
Rhino Mountain Forest Reserve was not Indian property. It was just... It is now the Riding Mountain Park. But anyway, apparently the forestry authorities were satisfied with what I had done, and they offered me a job on the Forestry Service. And I left the Mounted Police, went to it, and I was then transferred to Kamloops. But after serving there for some time, they were going to send me back. In those days, the lands 20 miles east side of the railway in British Columbia were Dominion.
Ah, yes.
Anyway, they were going to move me back to the prairies, but I decided I wouldn't do that, and I went to Victoria and went on the provincial police. That would be in April of 1914.
April 1914, the provincial police,
yeah. And I served on it until 1950.